Welcome to another episode of the SB Live Washington Podcast, your weekly conversation about high school sports and the people who play them across the Evergreen State. I'm Andy Bueller, statewide preps reporter, joined, as usual, by SB Live's preeminent basketball mind and the host of the ISO podcast on the Believe Podcast Network, Dan Dickow. And as you may know him, Many Hats Millis on Twitter, SB Live senior reporter here in the Northwest. He's your pal and mine, whether he likes it or not. Tacoma's own Todd Millis. Gents, how are we doing this week?
I'm well, other than the fact it's supposed to snow maybe up to 4 inches here in Spokane Friday. We're recording October 22nd. That's ridiculous.
I heard it's 100% chance. I'm talking to some Idaho football coaches. The one in Coeur d'Alene, Sean Amos, he said 100% chance of snow, with guaranteed snow on Friday night football. That's crazy.
Oh, that's great. You're not going to come over from the west side and cover those games in Idaho the way you have the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I'm going to tie my two Shiba Inus to a sled, and we're heading over right now. I should be over there by kickoff Friday night. Yeah.
Nice.
I would come dressed like the Michelin man on the sidelines if that was the case. So. Man. Glad to have you guys here. Glad to be here again, as we do each week. We're in month 8 here in Washington of the COVID-19 pandemic that's halted high school sports. We've tried our best to keep you up to date on how and when sports will return. We know that all eyes are on December 28th. That's the targeted start date for season 2, which has been crafted and revised by the WIAA. But counties need to reach a certain benchmark to get there. We went over that a couple weeks ago. That season's going to feature basketball, bowling, swim, dive, gymnastics, wrestling. And we know a couple weeks ago the governor's office and State Department of Health issued new guidelines outlining what it's going to take for sports to return in Washington. If you want to learn more on that, that can be found on our website. It covers the state of Washington, scorebooklive.com/Washington. I'll be sure to link to more information on that in the show notes. But this week, we're going to touch on two topics. First, the 11-on-11 invite-only padded scrimmage that took place on October 4th. It gave more than 100 uncommitted football recruits the opportunity to play in pads, to gather film, and to potentially boost their recruitment. But it didn't have clearance from state or local officials. The Seattle Times reported last week. Does that mean that it was the right thing to do, the wrong thing to do? Was it somewhere in the middle? We're going to touch on that in a moment. And then afterward, in the wake of the Lakers winning the 2020 NBA title in the bubble, which means that former Bellarmine Prep standout Avery Bradley won a ring, Todd put together a story answering the question, who are the top 5 players from Washington to ever win an NBA title? We're going to dig a little deeper on that question later. But first, on October 4th, a padded scrimmage took place at First Creek Middle School, featuring, as I said, more than 100 top uncommitted high school football players, mostly from Washington, some from Oregon. The event was put on by Bellevue-based Ford Sports Performance. It was streamed online for college coaches. Commentary was provided by maybe the preeminent recruiting analyst on the West Coast. You know, former NFL players, big names in the high school scene here, helped put it on, helped coach, were there as volunteers, and hundreds attended. And for the players, it was the first time in more than 9 months that most of them had even put on pads. And Todd and I were both there. We covered it. And those who we talked to really jumped at that opportunity when it was provided. So as so many especially have been itching to get back into a football setting during this shutdown, and they're starting to feel the pressure of other states playing and the disadvantage that that presents in recruiting. The scrimmage, as far as I know, was the most high-profile showcase we've seen in the state, especially in this pandemic. It also flouted state ordinances and came at a time when the Tacoma Pierce County Health Department issued a warning about a local spike. It's not clear if the CEO and founder of FSP will face any actual consequences for putting on the event, but let's be very clear. Many of these kids and their parents really leapt at this opportunity. So my question to you guys is, was the fact that it took place despite sidestepping some guidelines and ordinances a good thing? Was it a bad thing? Was it somewhere in between? What do you guys say?
Yeah, I think it was somewhere in between, quite frankly. You know, I do not know Tracy Ford. I follow him a little bit on social media. I've seen some of the articles of the things that you guys have covered that he's put on. I think his heart's in the right place and wanting to help kids, and I commend him for that. I am a little skeptical, I guess you could say, about going as hard as he did against state guidelines, whether you agree with them or not. I tend to fall in the camp that, you know, people should be able to make their own choices to a certain extent. Yes, you want to respect others' decisions. You want to keep everybody healthy and safe. But you're talking about allowing young, healthy athletes, that giving them the choice to be put in an opportunity where they can be evaluated to further their athletic and educational careers. We touched on this a couple weeks ago in one of our podcasts. You know, these lockdowns and the inability for young kids to get out and do what they love, and in this case, football, I think is really going to be detrimental to a lot of kids' mental health. I'm sure there's a lot of kids that, unfortunately, as have parents, fallen into, you know, the traps of unfortunately, some alcoholism and some drugs at this time. So, you know, I know there was a big article by the Seattle Times kind of, you know, highlighting some of the negatives about it. You know, I just think it was something that was done with a spirit of helping others. But it'll be interesting to see what the fallout is.
Yeah, I don't know how you can have an extreme answer one way or the other. And I guess it depends on, are you going to look at the spirit of the event and what it was and what the cause was, or the behind the scenes stuff and the guy who organized it? Now, we know the guy who organized it has been in the news in the past. He's a very visible, vocal trainer, businessman. I also think he's tried to go about things the right way with the SAW group. I think he just sort of felt like he ran out of time and said, you know what, we're putting this on. We're going to find a way to do it. I got to get cooperation from coaches, parents, kids, and then we're going to have to try and figure out the rest. And yeah, did they scoot some guidelines to get there? Yeah. What this thing was intended for was to get film, updated film for a lot of uncommitted football players who want a future in college football. And as you will talk about later, Andy, we'll go over some of the things, some of the developments from that game. I personally sort of fall on the side of the spirit of the game and what it was intended for. And, you know, there's a lot of people culpable of some of the shadiness, if lack of a better term, or of this particular event. But I look at it as these kids needed something and they got it. It's not like somebody robbed a bank to get them tuition. They just organized a football game. And so I really, really think if we're looking at it through that lens, yeah, I think this football game was a good idea. And a lot of people other than the aforementioned trainer signed off on it as well.
Yeah, no question. Some of the high school coaches I talked to about this question, the type of exposure and real life impact that something like this could have, you know, taking a look at college coaches who are under, you know, an in-person recruiting dead period, you know, would offers come from this? Would Power Five schools care? What's it like watching off of a stream? Can you really glean much from that? And it certainly depends on the coach. I'm not going to pretend to speak for coaches, but let me give you an example of someone who actually did benefit. Jacques Bottolotto Birdsell. He's an all-state running back for Camas. He was a big part of that team winning the 4A state title last year. He had 220 yards and 4 touchdowns in the state title game, and he expected after that that his recruitment would pick up, and it didn't take off. He entered the FSP scrimmage like 9 months later with offers from Portland State, Air Force, Central Washington, Georgetown, none in the Power Five. You know, he kind of expected that he'd be kind of on the cusp of that and really was hoping for a senior season to just prove his point. And he's the top running back in the class of 2021 in the state of Washington. I think all of us here could agree with that. On Wednesday, he got an offer from Nevada. A relationship with that coaching staff started after he scored twice and looked great in the FSP scrimmage. It's his biggest offer yet. And after announcing that offer publicly on Twitter the same day, Washington, Oregon, Washington State reached out. His recruitment's now picking up steam. Again, more than 9 months after that state championship game. So is Bud Alotta Birdsell a player who could have been getting those looks and maybe should have all along? Yeah, absolutely. He's going to be a high-level college football player, scrimmage or not. But his performance that day did come across the desks of several colleges. And Jacques told me that Wazoo coach Nick Rolovich like reached out to him at, like on his way back from the scrimmage, telling him nice work. So, you know, I think one of the questions that we tried to answer in our coverage of this shutdown is, you know, how are kids being impacted and what kinds of opportunities are being made to sort of mitigate that negative impact? And Jacques and a lot of these players just wanted a chance. If you go back and in the show notes, I'll link this story, but you know, Todd and I were there. Todd wrote a story on Butch Goncharoff, the former Bellevue coach who helped out coach this event. I just talked to as many players as I could and tried to gauge exactly where they were at and what in their recruitment. Because it's, you know, in the large scheme of things of high school athletes, it's a small number that are vying for those college scholarship spots. So at the same time, I will say, as a reporter on the scene, I had the same questions that the Seattle Times presumably asked. How was this happening? Field rental? Were there COVID waivers? The details were hard to come by. The location changed at least once in the days before, so did the time. It was a little fuzzy. But Tracy, as Todd mentioned, wrote the petition for the students who marched at the Capitol in September, which we covered. He emceed that rally. He was a leading voice on behalf of those same students on subsequent Zoom calls with the Department of Health, with Inslee's office, and the WIA trying to get them to go against their own COVID response and resume the season immediately. And when that didn't work, this event happened. And so I will say this, he has been involved in fighting for those opportunities. And the more and more I talk to players at the event and in the wake of it, it's clear to me that, you know, sure, it did not, you know, at least one invitee that I talked to didn't participate or was skeptical due to kind of how the camp was structured. Most players I talked to were genuinely appreciative of the opportunity, and one even described Tracy as somebody who kind of had to fall on the sword publicly a little bit at his own expense for players to get opportunities to be seen. That's just how one player framed it. You know, he certainly inherited the risk, I'll say that, and I wonder if he's the only one that could have made something like this happen because he's willing to step outside of the ordinances, maybe cut some corners a little bit, regardless to those in attendance, which Todd and I were among them. There were a lot of appreciative parents and players. So, you know, undeniably a positive opportunity provided to some, though I will say at this time, you know, everyone involved is lucky that there hasn't been like a known spread of COVID or a major injury that happened when, you know, these players weren't really practicing much in pads before this event. There were a couple early hits that I'm sitting there going like, oh man, this is a little bit rough in the first quarter of this game. And, you know, they kind of played their way into it. And I think a lot of the players just enjoyed being back in that setting. So a perfect storm of politics, opportunity, desperation from players, families. And I think good intentions created this. I also think it was bound to happen. And the fallout's been complicated as you guys both elaborated on. So very interesting development here. You know, we're still months away from a high school football season. So Todd, you and I, we're sitting here each week going, how can we continue to tell the stories of those impacted by this shutdown as in Washington, as our focus has been on Idaho and the players that are playing. So that's kind of where we stand with this topic. And we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor. When we come back, we're going to talk about the LA Lakers. We're going to talk about Avery Bradley and the five best players with Washington ties to win an NBA title.
This podcast is brought to you by Washington Federal. Washington Federal is a local bank and portfolio lender with more than 200 branches across 8 states, more than 32,000 fee-free ATMs, 24/7 online and mobile banking with drive-up ATMs. And Washington Federal is a proud sponsor of Scorebook Live. They care deeply about high school sports and the communities that support them across the entire state of Washington. Head to WFDBank.com to learn how they can help you meet your financial goals. That's WAFDBank.com. Washington Federal, a neighbor you can count on. We hope everybody's staying safe and healthy. We're just as excited for high school sports to return as you are.
Last week, the Lakers won the 2020 NBA title in the bubble. And their point guard and defensive specialist, Avery Bradley, a Bellarmine Prep alum, opted out of the playoff bubble due to concerns of his family's health. But he still gets a ring because of his contributions throughout the season. That led to Todd drumming up the idea of answering the following question. Who are the best NBA players with ties to Washington who have won a title? And if there's one thing this list shows me, Todd, it's with all the greats who came through the league from Washington, including our very own Dan Dickow. The list of those who have won one is just a fraction of that, and it just shows how dang hard it is to win. How did you come up with this idea, and what did you find in the process?
Yeah, well, you're right, and I think we'll all agree. There's the list of guys that have played in NBA Finals with ties to Washington high schools is as good, if not better, than the list of guys who have won it. But there were, I think I counted 9 guys from Washington that played high school basketball in Washington that have gone on to the NBA and now are wearing a ring. And so we came up, I thought it would be a good idea to just kind of do some research and base it on kind of their, you know, what they did in high school, what they did in college, what kind of career they had, and how many rings they won. That was sort of the simple criteria, and asked, you know, kind of the four of us to kind of rank them. And yeah, it's interesting. I think the top tier, the two guys could be, you could swap them out. I think that list, I think the top of that list on, or the first two spots of that list on anybody's list would have to be these two guys. And it would be James Edwards from the Detroit Pistons, who played in the Metro League at Roosevelt, and Jason Terry, also a Metro League guy who played at Franklin. Coming up with the list, my tiebreaker was that James Edwards won three NBA championships, two with the Bad Boys and the Pistons in the early 90s, and then finishing his career at 40 years old, coming off the bench for the Bulls in 96 with Jordan. So it's that was sort of mine, but I'd be curious to hear what you guys think of who should be in the top five and maybe occupy those top few spots.
I thought it was a interesting list, and it was well done, Todd. I do agree. I think JT and Buddha could be flip-flopped, but three titles obviously trumps the one with Dallas for JT. The name that brought back a lot of memories for me when you put it out there was Gene Conley, one of the only guys to play Major League Baseball as well as played in the NBA. And the reason is because I used to collect basketball and baseball cards growing up. I started with baseball cards, and I believe I have like a 1957 Bowman or 58 tops, one of those of Gene Conley with the Milwaukee Braves, where he's got the, you know, it's a staged photograph, but it's like he's going into his stretch above his head with the pitchers with the mitt and the ball in his hand. So that was a fun one for me to see. You know, of those guys, the most interesting one and the one that really surprises me that doesn't get enough recognition maybe in the state of Washington, because his career was so long and he played so many different roles over the course of his career, is Jason Terry. I mean, before we began recording, we were just talking about some random stats offline. And Todd, you said you couldn't believe that JT was 66, I think, all-time NBA points. I knew he was top 5 all-time NBA made three-pointers. I didn't realize he was 66, but when you start thinking 18 years in the NBA and he was a starter for the majority of his career, shows you just how impressive of a career that Jason Terry had. I was teammates with him in Atlanta for my first year and a half before I was traded. And so I saw kind of a young JT that was still trying to learn his way in the NBA as a leader and as somebody who was winning games. He was putting up the numbers, but he wasn't doing the leadership and the winning of games that he became a part of and knew how to do those things once he got to Dallas, because we were also then teammates for a short bit in Dallas. And in that about year and a half stretch where we weren't on the same team, I was blown away with the growth that he showed as an NBA player. And I think a lot of that has to do with organizations in the franchise that you're around. Atlanta, we had a bunch of selfish guys. And sometimes you just kind of fall into that trap, because JT, by no stretch of the imagination, was a selfish or me first guy at Franklin High School or at Arizona, because he won a title at both those places. You know, but sometimes in the NBA, that's kind of the veteran leadership kind of guides you in that direction. And then when we were teammates in Dallas, we had Dirk Nowitzki, we had Michael Finley, we had Jerry Stackhouse, Avery Johnson was in his first year as a head coach. We had all these really well-entrenched veteran guys that basically, I believe, showed JT, like, look, you're a great player. You can have great success on a great team if you're with us. And he did, and he became a huge part of what Dallas did for a number of years. And it's cool to see him come full circle now that he's coaching at Arizona. That'll be fun to see how that plays out this year.
That title in Dallas was such a great, like, mid-market success story too. And he was, you know, as much a part of that as, you know, so many of their other great players. Dan, did you cross paths with him at all in high school?
Never played against each other in high school. First time that I played against JT would have been at the pro club over in Redmond, where Steve Gordon used to have phenomenal runs. And if you were a high school kid and got invited to those, that was a pretty big deal to work out. So I would have been the couple days that I went against JT when he was also there, I would have been the only high school kid. The college guys would have been Michael Dickerson, would have been Jason Terry, Donald Watts probably. And then the NBA guys was the who's who of Sonics guys or guys from Seattle area. Detlef Schrempf, Buddha Edwards, who you mentioned, Xavier McDaniel, Eric Snow, you know, guys that a lot of them kind of took me under their wing as when I was a high school kid and included me in the workouts and treated me as similar once we got into the scrimmage type stuff. So those were the first times I would have went against JT. And I remember clearly a high school kid, we had a drill. It was full court, point guard, handled pressure, full court ball handling drill. And it was 1-on-3. So the one offensive player against three defenders. The three defenders were Eric Snow, who was in the NBA at the time with the Sonics, Jason Terry, who was one of the two quickest guys in college basketball at the time, him and Allen Iverson. And the third would have been Michael Dickerson, who was unbelievably athletic, smart, strong as all heck, and just knew the game in and out. And as a high school kid, that was kind of like my welcome to the level of athleticism and skill that you have to be successful moment.
That's awesome. You mentioned the name Detlef Schrempf, and it's a good segue into our final question of today's, of this week's podcast. Todd, that list of nine is pretty impressive of guys with ties to the state of Washington who've won NBA titles, but much longer list of guys who haven't won one. And Detlef, you know, certainly is kind of among those names. Todd, is there any do you want to elaborate on any of the names that you that jumped out to you of guys who got close or, you know, were great players in the league but just never won a title?
Well, I mean, John Stockton, I think, would be the unanimous decision on that. And, you know, again, a part of a great, you know, were great teams that had to, you know, unfortunate task of trying to take down the Bulls in an NBA Finals, and he and his Jazz were one of them. Bob Hubergs is the guy that, you know, the yesteryear guys remember. An All-American center. I mean, he was a fantastic player. He's still one of the all-time greats for the Huskies. Early in his career, had a chance at an NBA championship. I think he went 7 games, had a, you know, pretty good but short NBA career. He was a guy that I thought that maybe should deserve some mention, especially with sort of the buzz around his name up in Seattle on Montlake. A guy, you know, today's basketball player would certainly know about.
Yeah, I think the guy for me that didn't win a title that stands out is an easy one for myself, John Stockton. You know, he got to the titles 2 times. And, you know, it's one of those things that when I was a kid growing up, I always looked at John as, hey, look, he's a about the size that I'm probably going to be. He probably had many of the same challenges that I had. He made it. I'm never going to let anybody talk me out of my dream of getting to the NBA. So I'm going to work at it and see what happens. And lo and behold, all these years later, you know, I'm friends with John and I get a chance to pick his brain about the game of basketball all the time. And just this past weekend, I was down at his open gym runs on Sundays in Spokane that I still get invited to and I go to occasionally. And we're sitting there talking as there was a game going on. And I just asked him out of the blue. I was like, "Hey, did you watch The Last Dance this summer?" And because he was interviewed in it. And a lot of people were, quite frankly, they were a little surprised that John was interviewed for it. And so was I. And he was like, "Nah, I haven't watched it." And I just kind of gave him a look. I'm like, "How come?" I mean, he's like, "Well, I've already seen most of those games. I know how they played out, and I don't want to see it through his lens." You know, but he's got tremendous respect, and he admires, obviously, what Michael Jordan did. But John's an ultimate competitor, and he was at the cusp of winning a couple titles and having lost them to the Bulls. I'm sure still doesn't sit well with him to this day. But yeah, I would absolutely say John Stockton.
That's so funny that he hasn't watched it. that I guess there's a part of me that doesn't surprise me. But love the insight there, Dan, as well as the story from you, Todd. You can find that story. It's live now, scorebooklive.com/Washington. It's your home for high school sports news and information across the Evergreen State. That's it for this week's episode. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. We hope to have you back. So for SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, they're Dan Dickow and Todd Millis. I'm Andy Bueller. Be back next week.
This podcast is brought to you by SB Live Washington and SB Live Sports, your national hub for high school sports news and information. Subscribe for free wherever you get podcasts. You can find our work at scorebooklive.com/Washington. As always, a big thanks to our sponsor, Washington Federal, and thanks to Dan Dickow and Todd Millis for bringing the heat every week. The song you're hearing is by the band Woodrow. It's called "So Far Away," written by Carl Johnson, James Schroeder, and my dad, Matt Bueller. I'm Andy Bueller. Talk to you next week.